Due to circumcisions beyond our control.
Sorry.
She was going to be a little shorter. Okay.
Thank you to Ryan
Okay. Last week we learned about the third class of the third grouping, if you will, of the words of the Chachamim, according to the way the Maral divided them. Maral's basic goal here is to be able to overcome the problem of Baal Taisif. In the Torah it says that it's forbidden to add to the Torah, and even if technically, as the Maral said, it may not be fitting within the prohibition of Baal Taisif, because adding to the Torah would have to be adding within a mitzvah, changing the way a mitzvah is fulfilled. For instance, adding a fifth paragraph within the boxes of the tefillin that would be included in the boxes of the tefillin. However, fundamentally, one still needs to understand why it is that the words of the Chachamim are appropriate. Why is this kind of an addition something that really should be coming? Why wouldn't the words of the Torah stand on their own, stand for themselves? And the Maral divided up. First category was where the words of the Chachamim that they gave were the explanations of the Torah. The Torah, of course, in itself needs understanding, needs explanation, and again, much of that explanation is directly halacha l'Moshe Sinai, etc., or explanations which came from Moshe Rabbeinu from Sinai. But that's not an addition to the Torah. That is the Torah itself, the original Torah itself, without any question. We spoke, the second category was asmachtos, things which the Chachamim said based on attitudes that they derived from the Torah. Even though the Torah itself perhaps wasn't obligating it, but nevertheless, based on the quote-unquote the Das Torah, the understanding that the Torah seemed to have, remember the example, they showed that the nations which would be distanced from each other, the natural thing would be not to interact by eating each other's developed foods, but at most, a little water, some raw ingredients, right? That was natural. So when the sages decided that things had to be put in place in order to prevent greater social interaction, they said, well, let's address this, and let's say that they are not allowed to trade in cooked foods and so on and so forth, and they forbade bishulakum, things which were cooked from the goyim. But that in itself is really just giving a basis for understanding what the sages would then forbid. What do they forbid? What do the sages create? What do the sages create? So the part which we focused on last time was the mishmeres, what the sages call in Pirkei Avos the fence around the Torah, the siyog l'Torah. Things, rules that they instituted in order to protect the mitzvahs, in order to keep a buffer zone around them. And the Maral, last week, what we learned, he expressed it and explained it using a metaphor that the sages themselves gave. The aver, the limb of the person as corresponding to the mitzvah. The Talmud says that a human body is composed of 248 component parts, 248 avarim, 248 limbs. And corresponding to that, we have 248 positive commandments. Of the 613, 248 of them are positive commandments. Explains the Maharal that the limb that is created, it exists, but it also has built in its safeguards, things which protect it, which keep its existence in place. In a certain sense, we called it, the self-protection instinct, the survival instinct. And the Maral says that it is normal and expected that function, once the item is created, once the object is created, let's say in the case of the limb, that it then becomes the responsibility and the expectation of the person who has it, that they protect it. We gave it to you, now you take care of it. And to a certain degree, that's the way it is as well with the mitzvahs of the Torah. Hashem gave them to us, and we have to preserve them. And part of preserving them may be creating these protective devices. The example which we gave was, well, Hashem created the eye, and Hashem also gave us the eyelid, which serves as a protector for it. But if for some reason something went bad, something went wrong, or there was some dryness there, so the person would themselves, they would create some kind of a compress or something that they would place on it that would protect it. If a person has a break in the skin protects the internal organs. It protects the blood flow. It protects everything from infection. If a person has a cut, a break in the skin, so what do? They put on a piece of artificial skin. They put on a bandage that protects the internal organs. We understand that once we're given it, it's our obligation and the expectation that we will be the ones to take over the responsibility to care for it, to protect it, to make sure it stays the way it was. And so we have it. And therefore, it's not really a new mitzvah. What the Chachamim are doing, right, the eyelid is not separate from the eye. The eyelid is part and parcel. We give you the eye and you understand you need the eyelid. So therefore, over here as well, Hashem gave us the mitzvah, and then he said, and you know, besides what I've given you, you have to also come up with the methods to protect that you could hold on to this mitzvah that I've given you. And that's a very, very important part of the legislation which the Chachamim created. You know, whether it is, we're not supposed to eat a goat which is cooked in its mother's milk. So we understand. The commentary is that you're not supposed to eat meat which is cooked with milk. It doesn't have to be specifically its mother's milk, but it has to be the kind of animal that has mother's milk, right? Not a chicken, right? Or something like that. It has to be something that has that property. That's the explanation of the mitzvah. But the sages came along and they said, you know, chickens don't have mother's milk, but you shouldn't have chicken with milk either. And not only shouldn't you have it cooked with milk, but you shouldn't even have it next to milk. And maybe there should even be a break between when you eat the meat and when you eat the milk. Those are not rabbinic commentaries. Those are rabbinic additions, rabbinic legislation to protect the idea that we're not supposed to eat meat and milk cooked together. So they created a greater barrier, a greater distance. Hashem gave us the mitzvah, and we have to make sure that we keep it well. And that is an addition, yes, but it's an addition within and around the mitzvah. So the sages are not creating in that sense a new mitzvah. Ad kan, this is what we discussed in the past. But we have one more category. And that category cannot be presented as simply being an adjunct or a part of the other mitzvahs. Harviyei mitzvah she'enam l'siyagu l'geder. The Maral speaks and he says the fourth category are mitzvahs that are not a fence or a safeguard protecting an existing mitzvah. What is this category? Mitzvahs which were created at specific times. Like, for instance, the idea that we need to light Hanukkah candles. That's not something which Hashem gave us. Now, in a certain sense, we could just stop and say, you know, Hashem couldn't have given that to us. Why not? Because there was only one prophet who gave us mitzvahs. And his name was Moshe. That's why the five books of the Torah end with the death of Moshe Rabbeinu, even though arguably the story is not complete until the Jewish people get into Israel, which is what they've been angling for since they left Egypt. But nevertheless, the Torah doesn't include the book of Yehoshua, which is the book that completes that story. Why? Because with the death of Moshe Rabbeinu, the quality of prophecy that could produce for us what we call pure, perfect Torah, the Torah that can give us laws and mitzvahs from Hashem, it ends and it dies with him. So, we have the Torah which is given to us by Moshe Rabbeinu. The story of Hanukkah took place in the midst of the period of the Second Temple, when there wasn't even the words of the prophets, let alone the words of the granddaddy of all prophets, Moshe Rabbeinu. So, to celebrate Hanukkah would not have been something that the Torah could have said. However, so one might say, well, okay, so the sages had to sort of like pick up where the Torah left off if there was something that needed to be done. But the Maral, as would be typical in terms of the gravity with which he takes the words of Chazal, is not satisfied to catch this and say Hanukkah was created by the sages and it's not safeguarding the mitzvah of the Torah. It's adding something because technically they were the only ones who could. The Maral explains it with some greater appreciation of what that is. And again, this is the second part of the first be'er, of the first well, and it begins, if you have the Hartman edition on page Mem Tes, we're right now on page Nun. So he says, "Vazen nafla hashela biyoser." Here, the question is at its greatest. Be'ezet tzad yiskashu mitzvahs elu mitzvahs haTorah. In what way do these mitzvahs connect to the mitzvahs of the Torah itself? Atsheinam Torah b'fnei atzmo, until they wouldn't stand as a separate, freestanding Torah, two Torahs. Kasha alayim medover zeh gamkein medover zeh in kasha. When you look at this, this is also not difficult. Why? Ki b'mesha kol haMitzvah shem yidivrei kula miyashrim haAdam. Because all of the mitzvahs which the sages established, they are miyasher ha'adam. They make the person straight. They develop the person and they correct the person. They make the person more on point and on target. Until the person is then complete with everything that needs to be done. It complements the Torah that gave us mitzvahs to make the person right, and here we have additional things that are needed in order to complete that picture. And the person will be distant from actions that are not befitting. Because of this, everything together is on one theme, and that theme is to make the person as perfect as possible. A little tiny bit of context. There's a verse which says, Ho Elohim Asa Es Adam Yashar. God made man straight. Vehima Bikshu Cheshbaynes Rabbi. But man sought many cheshbaynes. Man sought many, many complications. What does that mean? Why is it true that we want to make life complicated? Is that the case? The sages understood this and applied this verse to say, well, let's look at man as he was originally created. As man was originally created, Adam Arishon, so the single real guiding force in his life was the neshama, the soul that provided that clarity of vision that we talked about the first week that we got together. That clarity of vision where he saw everything straight, truth and falsehood. He was not motivated by the physical desires that would then have to struggle with the higher and spiritual goals. That is straight. Bechira, free choice, yes, perhaps it's a faculty that man had even then when he was straight, that he had a choice to make life complicated. But the ongoing dynamic, the way we experience it, of Bechira, free choice, is because things are mixed up together. They're not straight, they're not clear. We have cheshbonos rabim. We need to make these many different calculations to try to sift and to try to figure out what is really the good thing for me to do, what is it that I'm perhaps just attracted and interested in doing, but it's not really the right and the straight, the ideal thing. God made man straight. And when man partook from the tree of knowledge and went after that which was desirous and brought that into himself, he made his perspective much, much more clouded, and therefore he made life that much more complicated. Cheshbonos rabim. Man then needs many, many, many calculations to figure it out. We understand that the mission of Torah is to try to make us clear and straight again, to help guide us to find the path that would have been the original path, what we call the tree of life, which is what the Torah, of course, refers to in Gan Eden as being the opposite of the tree of knowledge, and what we refer to the Torah by every time we put it back and we sing Eitz Chaim Hi L'machazikim Bo, that it's a tree of life to those who hold on to it. So this expression that the Maral uses, that the Torah is Hayishara, which is the verb to speak about straightening, right? It's to make Hayishara, put a hay on the beginning, put a hay on the end. You take the word Yashar in the middle. Hayishara is straightening, making one Yashar, making one straight, correcting one's course, correcting one's vision. That's the mission of Torah. Says the Maral, whether it is what Hashem said or whether it is what the sages added, it's all for this single purpose. And therefore it all rallies around one goal, and therefore it can be called one Torah. But I hope you're not going to buy that as it is, because, okay, fine, it's all towards one goal, but if it's all that one goal, and it all fits in that one goal, so why didn't Hashem just cover everything? So the Maral here says something fascinating. And again, we'll hit it more briefly than we perhaps would have otherwise, because I'm going to have to go in to participate in the Bris celebration. But the Maral makes the following point, and it's a very, very, very vivid point. In the Ein Lishon, he says, if you shouldn't ask, meaning the first question which obviously would pop into your head is, Im kein lama einam nesunim in Hashem Yisbarach, if this is all part of that which is necessary to make man right again, to make man straight, so why didn't God say it? Why didn't He give us everything, all the equipment, all the tools that we would need? V'zeh kidichsiv, v'yipach ba'apov nishmas chayim. And this is as it says, and he blew into his nostrils the breath of life. Vadvorim hativim kulam hemin hateva. Natural things, however, all come from that which we call nature. Vateva poelas, and nature does its thing. Shekach Hashem yizborach sidras hateva lifal varim hativim. That's why Hashem arranged the world, that nature does accomplish certain things. Well, what is the Maral talking about? Let us try to explain this. One thing which, by the way, you may know already, if not you will discover through learning the Maral or learning any Sefer like it, is that the entire Torah is a commentary on its first two chapters. In other words, the story of the creation, first three chapters, the story of creation and of the development of man and of what happened in Gan Eden, when we're going to look at the Torah from a Jewish thought process instead of a Jewish law process, we will constantly go back to there. Constantly, constantly go back to there. Right? The whole thing goes back to there, because one has to just think about it. There we have man in his ideal creation, and man then compromising that ideal, and really the rest of the story is to get us back there. What's the term that we use in Hebrew, in the language of Chazal, to describe paradise, to describe the end of days? Mm-hmm. Gan Eden, the Garden of Eden, right? So we're all just trying to get back to the original condition. So understanding the original condition, understanding the compromise of the original condition, is going to be very, very important to identifying the dynamic of what we're doing. So if it gets a little like, oh my gosh, here we go back to Bereshis again, don't say you were not warned. When Hashem created man, it says, and he blew into him the breath of life. When Hashem created man, it really starts, in fact, earlier with something else. What does it say? God said, Vayomer Elokim, Nase Adam Betzalmenu Kidmuseinu. Let us make man in our image and our form. Let us make man. That's certainly unique in the story of creation. What does it mean, let us make man? Classic question. In fact, it would lead one perhaps to the possibility of heretical thoughts. What do you mean? Is it a committee? Is it indeed more than one God? We declare Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, Hashem is the one and only. What is this partnership that's being alluded to in Nase Adam? And Rashi gives an interpretation that God had to, you know, as a matter of derech eretz, as a matter of common courtesy and decency, he had to share, he had to ask the angelic beings, because now for the first time he was creating something with spirituality, besides for the angels. So he said, you know, I'm like sort of infringing on your turf. So he involved them in the decision. He didn't want to take it away from them without consulting with them. Okay. The Ramban, however, says a different interpretation of the Pasuk. And it's a very vivid interpretation of the Pasuk. The Ramban says as follows. Till that point in time, what happened? What else was created in the world? Everything which was created in the world fundamentally, again, you could talk about the angels. The angels were the pure spirit. Everything else which we have created in the world, as we talked about last time, was pure physicality. What's unique about man? What's unique about man is that he has both these things. He has the physicality and the spirituality. Says the Ramban, when Hashem said, let us make man, that's exactly what he's saying. He's saying man is going to be a composite being. On the one hand, he has a physical body, which the matter, the material of the world that already exists, is going to generate. Just like it generated the animals. How did the animals get created? What does the verse say? Totze ha'aretz nefesh chaya lamina. Let the earth bring out living beings. You and I could wonder, how could it be? A clump of earth is going to produce a vibrant animal? So of course, it needs a little bit of God's tinkering, to put it mildly, in order to be able to do it. But that's the description, the beginning and the end. The earth produced it. It doesn't say that in order for the cow to breathe and to say moo, that God had to blow into it a divine soul, that God blew into it life. The earth produced life. Just like the earth we see every day producing plants and grass. Grasses, you see seeds, but I mean a seed, you know, you shell it and you chew it, right? What is it? It's vitality. There is somehow some kind of vitality that's nested within it that it's able to produce. So in the original creation, it produced even more vitality. It produced the living, walking organisms, animals, lions and tigers and bears. Thank you. So we have that. But this time Hashem said, instead of me creating angels distinctly, separately, instead of you, the earth, creating plants and animals and who knows what, which will just be physical beings, physical things, now let us join together and create man. Nase Adam. The earth will produce the body, and I will insert in him the soul. Nase Adam. Let us together make the human being. It's a very vivid explanation of the verse, let us make man. If you think about it, it's such a simple explanation, such a simple resolution of a very, very profound verse. So what does that mean? That means that in creation, in general, I mean even well before the creation of man, God created something that in itself had the power to create. Yeah, maybe with a little help, with a little coaching. But you know, even also without much help and much coaching, grasses grow. The earth produces them. New things that the earth produces. And then there are things that require God. Lightning bolt. Vayivra. He created to create something new, to bring down a new charge. I can't let the earth produce this. The earth doesn't have the capability of producing it. It needs my participation. It needs a divine move, a divine thrust from above. Says the Maharal, the same thing is true of this straightening, this haishara of man. There are things, there's a Torah that could only come in Hashamayim, that could only come from above. But then there is also the ability that exists in, quote-unquote, nature, in the human being himself, to be able to develop that which will refine him. Hashem isn't the only, quote-unquote, creator. Hashem created others in whom he invested the power to create themselves. The power which the Torah explicitly gave to the sages to legislate. When the Torah said, you should not deviate from anything which they instruct you, is because of this notion of shared creative power. Where you can figure it out, figure it out. Not everybody. Don't try this at home. Chazal gave it, the Torah empowered the sages, the consummate body of authority of the Jewish people, to create such things, to use their insight in order to be able to create these things for the Jewish people. But of course he did it. Just like he gave the earth the power to create. Just like he gave the man the power to create in other realms, he gave man the power to create in this realm as well. It's a limited power because it never can contradict that which God already gave us as correcting. We can say God gave us the power to intuit. So we're going to now we're going to pontificate about what we think is right and what we think is appropriate. Okay, but hold on 1 second. Hashem already told us a whole bunch of stuff about that. So if we're going to, let's say, sit here and debate the question of choice, of abortion, so the first thing we would have to do in any such situation, of course, is to look and try to study what it is that Hashem told us about this issue. But let's say, indeed, something arrives anew, a new experience for the Jewish people, like Hanukkah, like a miracle in that time. Is there not something that we, as creative, insightful partners that Hashem made us, that we can add to this? The Torah doesn't tell us negative or positive about this, but we understand that this story cannot go and then be just relegated to the dust heap of history. It has to be enshrined as part of our consciousness because of what it did. We can create it. What the ideas of developing ourselves, of perfecting ourselves, are reserved for Hashem? Let us make man. Hashem did a lot of it, and Hashem also gave us the power to continue to do it ourselves. That's part of the koach of the Rabbanon, the creative power of the sages. We have to work with the divine wisdom, but there's also areas where there's room to add where it clearly does not contradict. That's the thought. Any questions or comments?
Why doesn't when it says let us make man, why doesn't it just mean Hashem and man? That constantly throughout the ages, man has to interact, somehow has to come up with the way to react to the world. And so man is the being that minute by minute interacts with what's there. And I'm not sure how to say it, but I'm just...
No, on a certain level, I think that's correct. Once Hashem creates man, so man becomes the partner in creating or maintaining man. Of course, in the most literal sense, subsequent creation is going to be accomplished by people themselves. And even the la'avda u'lishamra, to develop the world, to safeguard the world, to protect the world, man is going to be the partner. The difficulty in using that as the simple meaning, it's a layer of meaning of the pasuk. The difficulty in using that as the simple meaning of the pasuk is because you can't talk to somebody who's not there, right? This is the origin of man. So he had to be addressing something that was already there. And from there comes the Ramban's interpretation that it's the spiritual combining with the already existing physical creation to do this.
What was the original task of Adam before the sin? Like, because he had probably a limited bechira, no? So how could he, how was he able to grow without having a true bechira?
He was able, at the very, very least, to commit to keep it that way. In a certain sense, man's original responsibility was, don't blow it. Just hold on. Don't blow it. Don't eat from the tree of knowledge. That's all. It says, La'avda u'lishamra. Hashem placed him in Gan Eden originally to work it and to keep it, to preserve it. Only later, after the sin, is it described as v'kifshua, conquer it, where it became a battle. Right? It's easier to keep something than it is to win something over. That was the change. And as we see, it was quite a difficult one. He wasn't able to do it. It's not so easy always to maintain the status quo when you're dealing with these kinds of challenges. To stay straight. Okay. That's the thought. There's more to do, believe it or not. Mm. And we will, God willing, again, I'm sorry for cutting it short today, but I have to participate in this. Okay, have a great day.
Thank you.